Madison, Wisconsin is as good as it gets if you are like me and you love the college sports.
This is the Jump Around with Jim Rutledge and Riley Auk. Streaming live on the ESPN Madison YouTube channel and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Dancing down the sidelines. Can they catch him now? The Badgers answer instantly. There will be no undefeated champion on Wisconsin with an unbelievable stretch drive to the championship game.
It's over. The Wisconsin Badgers win 17-9. They are the first Big Ten team ever to win successive Rose Bowl games.
That is the best college sports town in America.
And this is the best college sports show in America. The Jump Around on ESPN Madison and ESPN Milwaukee YouTube streams. I'm Jim Rutledge alongside Riley Yauch. Got Dimps behind the glass, and we got a lot to get into today, including the Wisconsin Badgers, Riley. They start their 2026 season at Lambeau Field against the Fighting Irish. Notre Dame likely to be ranked in the top 10 to begin the season. Big national game, and I think it is a good benchmark for how fans are going to feel about the Wisconsin Badgers this year.
Could you elaborate a little bit more on that? Because I have my own thoughts on how it will define the season, and I think it's definitely going to be a benchmark game regardless, but can you explain a little bit more? What do you mean by how this will determine how the fans feel about the season?
If the Badgers go out there, let's start worst case scenario. The Badgers go out there and they get housed.
Yep.
That means Camp Randall, even that first game, isn't going to be that full. And it's only going to get worse, which then affects, I think, the players over time. The vibes are low. The fans care less. Everything starts to go downhill. And you look at if they get smoked by Notre Dame, you look at this season, it's like, well, best case scenario, we make a bowl game. But let's not forget, we have a new AD at some point here. And it automatically starts to feel like a death march for Luke Fickell. Because getting blown out to start the year, then that starts to feel like a 6-7 win team. That's not a team that will keep Fickell around, most likely. And then what do you do? So the worst type of season as a fan, in my opinion, is the one where it's like, oh, we're just kind of spinning our wheels because none of this is going to hold for the next season and we don't know what's going to happen next. So any disagreement on if that happens or they get blown out? I'm not talking to you. I'm talking just in general, the fan base.
Yeah, I'd say in general for sure. But ultimately, I think it depends how do they look in the game while it's being
played.
Well,
that's why I said blown out. So we'll get to the next one here. So like, let's say they lose this game. They're in it. We've got kind of three options here. So I don't know exactly how they lose it, but if they're in it for three quarters and it's just kind of a war of attrition, they run out of gas or one brutal mistake.
Get out talented, I think is
that's
very
even like
possible.
A one brutal mistake late in the game, like, okay, fine. They hung in it. They just weren't good enough to compete with Notre Dame, a top 10 team, all the way through. But they were in it. They looked like they were competent against a very good football team, and they looked like someone that knows, like, kind of continue the momentum of the three games prior, or two or three games prior to Minnesota.
Yeah, I think that's what matters.
So that one, I think fans are going to leave feeling like, okay, there's something here. I want to show up for week one. I want to show up and see what happens. Give them a couple weeks, and we'll use Penn State as our next Harbinger game. And so that's the most likely outcome. Like if you're trying to not be doomsday or not be Pollyanna, you'd be kind of like right there in the middle. So I think we're on the same page that that type of game, we're going to feel okay about it. You're not going to feel like everything's lost, but you're like, okay, eight wins is on the table. Maybe we sneak nine, and we, you know, maybe that includes the bowl win, but all of a sudden we got something respectable here. And depending on what the new AD wants to do, you'd feel good if Fickell came back. You might be interested in the new head coach, because if they're going to bring someone to replace an eight-win coach, you'd have to believe it's a big-name guy. So, like, you could feel a little bit more excited about the season.
Yeah, regardless, there's probably going to be some excitement there. Yeah, that's what I think is also the most likely scenario there. Even if they get demolished, I think it again comes down to how did they look? Were they getting out-coached?
If you used the word demolished, then none of those things worked out well.
Okay.
So, like, so if they're, you know, if it's they end up losing by like 13, but it was they were within seven within a score to start the fourth quarter, then that's a war of attrition. You just kind of ran out of gas. You're not good enough. And that's a different story than getting demolished.
Yeah, I'm saying I think they're three touchdown underdogs right now. At least that's what the odds makers have them at. I think that's very possible. It could be a touchdown game going into the fourth quarter, and Notre Dame could still end up covering. Because Wisconsin runs out of gas, Colton Joseph makes a dumb interception, something along those lines.
If Notre Dame covers, you said three. What is it?
Three, I believe three touchdowns. Owen, I don't know if you could get
if
the
Notre
official
Dame covers
number on
that. It's I don't care how the fourth quarter started, but because the Badgers then just play it smart and ride it, you know, bleed it out. But I agree. Like if it's going to the fourth quarter to get to 21 would be pretty insane.
I mean, last time the Badgers played Notre Dame, that was exactly what happened.
Yes.
It was gross.
So with this
20.5 Notre Dame.
20.5.
Yeah, the Badgers at a minimum need to cover for fans to feel like they can build up some excitement. If the Badgers lose by less than double digits, Badger fans are going to be very excited for the rest of the season.
Yes.
Hopeful. I should say, you know what? Hopeful. That's the word you would use. I think if they lose by the spread or more, they're going to be kind of downtrodden. Like, oh boy.
Yeah.
They win by any means necessary, I don't care how they win. I don't care if it's the dumbest, luckiest play on the face of the earth and they won the game. Then you have genuine excitement.
Yes.
Because one, we're basically counting backwards of here we're at as a program. Is we want to get back to a bowl game. Mm-hmm. Like that's our first bare minimum to feel like we're a step towards respectability. And that's the baseline. And now you only have five more wins to go, and you knocked out one of the hard ones, and now you feel like the team has confidence. It honestly would have the reverse effect, and I said this last year, and I was right, and I wasn't happy I was right. But if they lost to Maryland at home, I thought that would turn the entire season the wrong way because they would lose their confidence, and then all of a sudden everything else, and then you had Michigan, and everything else would just get harder as it went along, and that's exactly what happened. Is that you get your knees cut out from underneath you. You have this hope. You have this off season. We're doing all this work, having all this. Now, credit to the Badgers. They were able to like scrounge up some respect towards the end of the season. But at that point, for all intents and purposes, the season was lost. But it was the Maryland game where you're like, not as fans, but just for the team. That was the game I was worried about.
And it was after, I remember you specifically saying, don't let Alabama beat you twice.
Yes.
And it looked like they let Alabama beat them twice.
It sunk their confidence. And if you beat Notre Dame, it's the reverse. It buoys your confidence. Now you feel like Penn State is within, you like have the memory of beating Notre Dame when you play Penn State. And now it's like, well, we can play with anyone. We can beat anyone. And that wasn't even at Camp Randall. That's a neutral site. And honestly, I mean, Lambeau could end up being Notre Dame.
It will probably be about 50-50. Yeah. LSU fans made it almost 50-50 back in 2016.
Yeah.
And I'd say I agree with pretty much everything you're saying. I would love to see Wisconsin spring the biggest upset since LSU at Lambeau Field. I'm not going to be the one to predict that. But you mentioned going back to what they used to be, to what we used to expect from the Wisconsin Badgers. And I think even in regards to that 2016 team, that 2017 team, the 2019 team, where you're beating up, you're winning all the games that you're supposed to win, but against the Ohio States, the Alabamas, the really good teams on your schedule, maybe you don't have the same caliber of talent. I think we can all agree Wisconsin, going into this Notre Dame game, they're not going to have the same talent that Notre Dame has. But again, will they be outcoached? Are they going to make mental mistakes? Are they going to play absurdly hard, which I think they will? Are they going to make fewer mistakes? How does the football look? Are they able to carry that momentum we saw, the type of football we saw them play last year against Washington and Illinois? Does that all carry over? What do we see? What does it look like? Even in defeat, can you still look competent and look like you belong on the same field as a team with significantly more talent than you? Because the Badgers teams of old, even when they were grossly out-talented, they always looked like they belonged. They always looked like they could hang and potentially spring an upset. And that's what I hope to see. That's more of what I expect to see this season. And we're going to find out right away against Notre Dame if they can do that this year.
All right, let's move on. And before we move on, why don't you tell everyone about Door County Distillery, who sponsors our rundown.
Yeah, you can take a look. That's new for this week, the Door County Distillery Rundown. Shamrock sees Greg Gard, Clip of the Week, Twitter portal. And then we have Matt LaPay joining us later. Very awesome stuff. But big shout out to Door County Distillery for that. Door County Distillery. There's a spirit you can only find in Door County. And Door County Distillery bottles it. Locally made in Carlsville, Door County Distillery crafts small batch spirits with Wisconsin ingredients and the flavors that make Door County unforgettable. From brandy, gin, whiskey, and my personal favorite, they got this cherry vodka. My dad makes amazing cherry mules with it. Would highly recommend. Highly, highly recommend. It's a true Door County experience. Visit Door County Distillery in Carlsville and find your local retailer and more at DoorCountyDistillery.com.
All right, let's talk Greg Gard, because apparently maybe one of our hosts got on a little bit. So give me the background on that, because I missed this.
Yeah, so on Wildy and Tausch the other day, there was a Twitter account. I'm not even going to name this Twitter account because I absolutely despise it. It's a fake reporter. They just take rumors.
But it's not even a real person.
No, it's not a real person. It's some burner. They pretend to be a real reporter and just take rumors surrounding Wisconsin sports typically. They delete the stuff they get wrong, which is almost everything. And then they, on the off chance, they get lucky and are correct because it was a commonly known rumor. Then they keep it up and make it look like they're legit. It's so frustrating. But Tausch saw this tweet where they tweeted out that Michigan's looking at Greg Gard as a potential option for head coach, which we have seen no legitimate reports that that's the case. But then Tausch reported that, and then it led to a discussion, which I still think is a legitimate discussion, about Greg Gard being looked at for other big jobs. How do we feel about Greg Gard as a whole when it comes to where he stands as a coach here and in the national scene, I guess. But I'd say that's the background on it. And I think it's still a discussion worth having, even if it was a fake report that means nothing. Michigan, from what I've read, Greg Gard's not on their radar right now.
And I mean this with all due respect, but why would he be?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just look at Michigan specifically and the NBA draft last night. So they had how many guys drafted? Three in the first round, I believe.
Three not early. Sure. I'll be honest, I did not watch the NBA draft.
They had Johnson, Lendenberg, yep. And then Mara.
Okay.
At least that those three sense, yeah. drafted very early. Two of those, actually all three in the lottery, I believe. So that's a program that just turned out one national title and turned out three lottery picks. They're playing, and that's their money is not dramatically higher than Wisconsin. It's higher than Wisconsin's, mm-hmm. but it's not the buku bucks. So it's a different playing field that Greg Gard has not proven that he can play in.
Mm-hmm.
So I've said this before, Greg Gard is perfect for Wisconsin and Wisconsin is perfect for Greg Gard. That where would Greg Gard go that these results would be okay? Because he's not going to take a step backward.
Mm-hmm.
And then if, let's say, and I'm just going to list off some blue bloods, not knowing exactly where they're all at, but like Indiana or Kentucky, because Wisconsin's still a good job. And so like Iowa State is not a step forward, in my mm-hmm. opinion. So now you're looking at, you really have to step into darn near blue blood or former blue blood type schools.
Mm-hmm.
And which one of those are going to come in and say, Greg Gard's the guy we want because he, and I hate this because then it's like ripping him because I think he's doing a great job at Wisconsin, but mm-hmm. he's the guy who hasn't been in the Sweet 16 in a decade. A guy hasn't, you know, done much in the tournament overall, hasn't turned out a lot of first-round picks, and hasn't, you know, recruits nice for old guys who will get picked in the second round. That's what I see. Nick Boyd, like.
Yeah.
Nick Boyd was 22. He might have been a late first-round pick. I think he'll still get picked today, or we're airing this on a Thursday, so he'll get picked on Wednesday, but like, again, old. I think he turns 25 or is already 25 years old. So
mm-hmm.
All those things would say Greg Gard is not going anywhere, which is a good thing. I think he is perfect for Wisconsin, and I think Wisconsin is perfect for him. Because otherwise, what? The parallel programs are what? Northwestern, and they're better than Northwestern. Or mm-hmm. Minnesota, and you probably could look at
better
the
than Minnesota.
Yeah, better than Minnesota, but like.
But Iowa. Iowa hired the Drake guy. Ben McCollum, is it Ben McCollum?
Ben McCollum,
Ben
correct.
McCollum, yeah, and he takes Wisconsin has a better regular season, but Ben McCollum takes Iowa to an Elite Eight.
Right.
Where they lose to Illinois. And now Ben McCollum, he was listed on ESPN's article
for
Michigan is looking at. Simply, he did great at Drake, and then he has tournament success.
And it also, you know who Gard reminds me of, and this is a major compliment, and I'm not going to know the first name, but Coach McDermott.
Sean McDermott?
At Creighton.
No, so, Sean McDermott's the broadcaster, I think.
At Creighton.
Yeah.
The Creighton head coach.
Yes. I know who you're talking about. I also don't know his first name.
Yeah, that part doesn't matter. But McDermott at Creighton, he's been there for a very long time. And at some point, when you decide to stay somewhere for a while, you end up just being there, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying the great guard's old, but, again, a lot of these schools, if you're looking to bring someone in, you're going to start looking for
the next big thing.
Yes.
Yeah, Greg McDermott.
Yes. All I could think about was his son, Doug. So that's why I was kind of, trying to figure it out. But that's where I think he's sitting. And I think Greg McDermott's a hell of a basketball coach. So that's not a knock on Greg Gard. I think those two would be parallels. And Gard's probably also a little bit to the point of he's been here too long that age-wise, there's if he had won a ton, but just like Bo Ryan wasn't going anywhere.
Until he did.
Right. Well, he left, though. I'm saying he didn't go to a different school.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where when Bo really got hot and started winning national scale things, his name wasn't popping up for other jobs. It had passed. Then it's just more of this is the great guy at this school. There's been other schools, usually smaller ones. The St. Joe's coach, I believe, was kind of there for maybe he ended up going to Miami. But in general, these guys stay at one school. After a certain point, you're kind of you're kind of the guy now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm probably going to echo most of what you said. We know Greg Gard is a great coach. We know he does a great job in the transfer portal, especially with limited resources or more limited resources compared to a school like Michigan. We know he's awesome in the regular season. But what has he struggled with? It's winning in March. And if you're a Michigan, if you're a Duke, if you're a UNC, when you're looking at job candidates, what is the first thing you're going to look at? Success in March.
And then
success
also
in the tournament.
NBA, because if you're trying to bring in the top transfer portal guys, a lot of those guys still want to go to the NBA, and that's the other part of it. And so, and Gard will turn 55 during this season.
Okay.
So, not old in life, but again, if you're bringing in a coach, you're kind of pushing. He's got about 3 or 4 more years to be considered someone that would want to go somewhere else. Because trying to bring in a 58-year-old coach, let's say it's a few years down the line, that gets even harder. So, Greg Gard is doing, and I also want to say that Greg Gard, if things didn't work out Wisconsin, would have plenty of options to coach somewhere else. It just wouldn't be the step up. He's just kind of, he's perfect for Wisconsin. That he is winning. He's putting up with what Wisconsin is or isn't giving him, and he's grinding out with his staff a way to win at Wisconsin. But then why would he leave Wisconsin? The most likely jobs available to him are a different version of Wisconsin with the same sort of restrictions. And then with his ties to the state, why would he leave here to go somewhere else that's a lateral move?
Yeah.
And so, that's it. I just don't see a world where Michigans or others are going to be calling for him. And I don't see a world he's going to leave for a lateral job. So Greg Gard, I think for the good of the program and for the good of Badger fans, he's here. And I think it's just a matter of figuring out how to win with him.
Yeah, and even if Greg Gard was taking Wisconsin to Final Four after Final Four, Sweet 16s, Elite Eight, et cetera, he seems like the guy that he would take a phone call from Michigan. He'd take a phone call from Duke and UNC. But I don't know if he'd leave. If he was having tons of success here, he seems like the kind of guy that would stay regardless. So there's several reasons I'm not worried about Greg Gard leaving. I don't want him to leave. I'm a big fan. But yeah, I don't think Michigan's calling him, and I don't think he'd leave anyway. Owen.
Sometimes the grass isn't always greener on the other side, so that's just what my answer was to your point right there. But
also, if North Carolina Duke calls,
he picks up the phone. Yeah. He listens.
Yes,
he hears
them out.
He takes
the call at least. But
if he's winning at Wisconsin, though, maybe if he was taking Wisconsin to Sweet 16, after, similar to Bo Ryan, and then Duke, UNC
here,
calls
gonna
him,
hate,
like,
you're going to hate me for this, but it would be similar to and you're right, grass isn't always greener, but with Council.
I was just going to say, because that's who I was thinking of was Craig Council.
I don't have enough resources to get them
and
over the hump.
And the Cubs, and obviously the Cubs are a blue blood, in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. To, and if you win with the Cubs, you're minted Hall of Famer, stat, like the whole thing, statue. And same thing, like the resources were there. And so the case would be if Guard had the opportunity, and it's probably UNC in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
Then I think that's where he would at least probably strongly consider, because one, his life gets a lot easier to go win national titles,
mm-hmm.
and coaches aren't afraid of the full-on pressure. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that let's just be somewhat realistic.
I'm just saying, if he's having success with Wisconsin, Wisconsin native, I don't think he leaves.
Sweet 16.
If he can't get over the hump, sure.
That's the way he goes. And so, but actually on that, I wanted to get to this for a second. The most interesting thing about Dusty May going to the NBA, two parts. One, it speaks like, look, life got easier for the Badgers, at least this year. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a very real world. Like, I see some of the names that could be going to Michigan, and obviously they have an interim coach right now. But one that would be very interesting, as you mentioned, Ben McCollum, would be what do they do at their coaching position? I mean, like, do they go for a former NBA guy? Do they try to bring someone back?
I think Juwan Howard's the right guy. If I'm Michigan, I'm bringing him back. Wolverine legend, history, a very clean record as a coach, never did anything wrong, specifically to Greg Gard after a game, that's for sure. Bring him back. If I'm Michigan, I'm bringing him back.
yeah, so I'm just trying to think, is there an NBA coach, the name that comes to mind, but I thought he was, maybe I just made up my head he was at Orlando, but Billy Donovan.
Mm-hmm.
Coach, I mean, he won multiple titles in Florida. Coach mm-hmm. in the NBA. He's going to be in the Basketball Hall of Fame because of what he's done and got the OKC to the NBA Finals. Like, heck of a coach. Older, but when you got that kind of resume. And then also, it's the, you know, he understands the contract side of it. But it was interesting mm-hmm. to me. And honestly, if I was betting anything for Greg Gard, it would be him retiring earlier than he planned on because of the exhaustion and the lack of joy college basketball is now. Because that seems to be a lot of the quotes coming out about Dusty May was that he wants to coach basketball. And that's not how it is currently in basketball. Maybe trying to get there with the GM side of things and mm-hmm. all of that. But like in college basketball, you have to do everything. You have mm-hmm. to identify the players, and you have to figure out how you're going to pay. At Wisconsin, you have to go raise the money too.
Yeah,
and I'm sure Dusty at least had to go appear at fundraising things and things like that. So a lot of they got into coaching. They love coaching college basketball, and I don't think these coaches are against players getting paid. It's more of it's then ruined what they were trying to do here. It had nothing to do with the players getting paid or not getting paid, but the coaches in college basketball went to college basketball to coach basketball. And that is like the third thing in their job now. And a lot of these guys, I think, are going to get tired of that. And we saw it in the NFL or college football. What was it? David Shaw retired.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Christ. I don't know if he's getting another job. Probably not. But these other older coaches, especially in basketball, are going to say, you know what? I wanted to coach basketball, and that's not a thing anymore. And I could see college. Like we saw it Halfley. Yep. With the Packers. He left Boston College, went mm-hmm. to D.C., now he's head coach in the NFL. College sports is getting too much, and it's not the professional side of it where, like, these guys shouldn't get paid. It's just, like, these coaches have to be GM, they have to be brand ambassador, they also have to coach this team.
Yeah, and I think that makes what Greg Gard has done here at Wisconsin and the success he has had in the transfer portal era even more impressive. I understand. We had the high point loss in the round of 64 this past year. I understand he hasn't been to the Sweet 16 since 2017. But to be able to do everything he has done and to put together winning teams that have been capable of making runs, they haven't done it, but they have certainly been capable of making runs. To be able to do that and build those relationships, especially with how many super talented guards he has brought in through the transfer portal year over year over year, that is so impressive and just speaks to the caliber and quality of Greg Gard as a coach, as a leader of the Wisconsin basketball program. It's so impressive. And having met and talked to him really just one time, that from that one interaction I had with him, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that he's been able to do it. He is. I'm a huge fan.
He's
I'm,
the perfect coach for the University of Wisconsin basketball
team. And I think that sums up the entire segment.
There you go. We're done then, right? No, let's do the next one. Got a clip of the week coming up,
which ties in to what you were just talking about.
Around these parts, there's only time for the best of the Badgers.
We don't know exactly where we are right now.
Why don't you own the Wisconsin football team?
We need to play better significantly.
They're spoiled rotten.
This is the clip of the week on the Jump Around.
Go someplace else. Go boo in a bar.
All right, and our clip of the week is Luke Fickell speaking here, so let's hear from Luke Fickell.
Coach, talk briefly about just like the state of college football. How do you feel about where college football is right now?
I don't know that we have enough time. I try and tell people all the time, is this what I envisioned, you know, when I got started? No, I don't think it is. But I tell people all the time, I said, you know what, I love competing and I love winning a hell of a lot more than, you know, anything else that's kind of evolved over the last 3 or 4 years in college football. And so whatever I have to continue to do to adapt and adjust and recognize, you know, the landscape of what it is and what we have to do to get this place, to get our program back to where we, where it belongs, I'm willing to do.
Do you miss what it was and what?
No, I don't look backwards. It's kind of like saying, do you reminisce or do you think back about it? I don't. I don't look backwards in a lot of the things and really pretty much anything. So, no, yeah, people don't understand. I don't think there's that big of a difference. Once you get inside the program, we still coach our guys really hard. We still build incredible relationships with guys. I think there's a unique new business side that we have not had to deal with as college football coaches. But I don't think as a whole that it's changed the 18 to 22-year-olds, maybe a little bit older, 23 and 24-year-olds now in college football. But it really hasn't changed. Maybe some of the ways in which you have to retain your team, ways in which you have to build internally. But the players, the people, they haven't changed.
And I get what he's saying there, but it is, and I don't think Luke Fickell, and I think most college coaches, I do think there are some, for some reason, are mad players are getting paid, but I don't think Luke Fickell's issue is with the players getting paid. I think when you talk about a difficult landscape or not what you got into is that I do think these coaches, and at the head coach level it's harder, but I do think these coaches want to build relationships with their players. They want to have that lifelong connection. They want to be important people in their players' lives. And it's harder to do that when money is a factor. And money at a young age, strangely, because you have your whole life to make money, I think matters even more because you've never had it and you don't know when you're going to get it again. And it can be blinding, and especially if these kids are coming from even middling circumstances, it can be life-changing and important. So you have to still factor that in, and then there's the portal aspect of it. And again, I'll say this till forever. The problem in college athletics is not the players getting paid, it's the portal. And lack of contracts of just, if you're going to pay them, fine. Just make them, you know, be on for a few years.
At least 2 years.
Yes. it's a good example here from Fickell. I do believe these coaches enjoy the ability to create relationships with these guys. And some of them point to, like, they will vaguely say today's college football, I don't think they're talking about, oh, we have to pay these guys. It's just more of everything's more transactional. Mm-hmm. And I really do think that they long for the days where it wasn't so transactional, but I also think that for the most part, including Coach Fickell, they understand these players deserve to get paid, and now it's figuring out a way to make it all work together.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you had to ask him point blank what his biggest frustration would be, it'd probably be that transactional nature and the inability to build relationships, because ultimately, I'm assuming, my dad's a coach, one of the big reasons you get into coaching, like you said, is to build these relationships and impact people's lives. And when players are bouncing around and able to leave on a whim for any reason whatsoever, and you don't know if they're going to stay, and they don't really have to communicate that with you whatsoever, I'm sure that's really frustrating. Or when you think you have a good relationship with someone, but then they're not getting the playing time they want. Or maybe they just have an agent whispering in their ear, like, hey, you're not getting what you deserve from this coach, this organization. And they listen to them, like you said, because money and influence can be very blinding when you're 18 to 22. I know if I was making six figures when I was in school, man, there are probably different decisions I would have made. Or if I had people in my ear, I don't know what I would have done. So I get it, and I can assume that would be horribly frustrating to be on the other side of it when it comes to Fickell and all these coaches in collegiate athletics. But I agree with him. I believe him when he says that once it gets inside the building, once it gets to the kids, to the football, that not much has changed. I brought up my dad. This is certainly not apples to apples, but he had to learn how to coach girls wrestling alongside boys wrestling at the same time. He's been very successful at it. He's been back-to-back state champs with girls wrestling, but coaching them is different. And I'm sure nowadays coaching players who their main goals or their main aspirations, their main why that you bring up so often is yep. money or fame or notoriety versus school, campus, winning championships, I'm sure that is a massive, massive adjustment. But ultimately, once you get to the football, you get down to the nuts and bolts, you get down to the coaching and the relationship building, it's all pretty much the same. So I certainly believe him in that respect.
All right, let's move on to the portal.
It's time for the Badgers Twitter portal.
All right, stepping into the Badgers Twitter portal. First up, we have Tyler Hero back to the Cheese State, back to the 414, at least for now. We don't know. There's been some reports that they might trade him. But Tyler Hero, who is best known for playing 11 in Stranger Things, is headed to Milwaukee. Guys, do you think Badger fans could ever forgive Tyler Hero for decommitting from Wisconsin and going to Kentucky?
If he somehow miraculously wins a championship for the Bucks, sure, I think the hard feelings could be forgiven. But I don't think he's going to be welcomed back with too many open arms. I don't think there's going to be the outright vitriol, and I heard he received death threats when he decommitted from Wisconsin, went to Kentucky. I don't think those are going to come back. But I think he's going to get a little bit of a cold shoulder, that's for sure, and it's going to take some time to thaw if he ends up playing for the Bucks.
You're saying from Badger fans?
Yes.
I wonder. I don't like Tyler Hero as a basketball player. It has nothing to do with him not coming to Wisconsin. It wouldn't have worked here, let's just be honest. It just wouldn't have worked well.
Yeah, I don't think he would have been a huge culture fit.
He wouldn't have been happy. The Badgers wouldn't have been happy. He, like Calipari, where he ended up, like, he doesn't necessarily coach. He just kind of lets the players do what they do well, which is fine, but the Badgers coach. Tyler Hero is kind of the same player he's always been. And he's, to me, Tyler Hero is AAU basketball personified. And I just don't enjoy that. And he's just empty calorie stats. So I hope he doesn't play here for the Bucks, because that means they likely will end up then extending him. And you're just paying a guy who doesn't play winning basketball. He's like the lesser version of the homeless man's version of James Harden. Like, great, he can get you some numbers. What do you do with that? You win nothing. And Tyler Hero's worse, like a worse version of that. So, like, yeah, I don't want him here, and it has nothing to do with the fact that he didn't want to play at Wisconsin.
Is there anything like a comparison to when Grayson Allen came to play for the Bucks?
A little bit. He didn't outright betray the Badgers.
But
he just
Badger fans
beat us and was a
like
dirty
him.
Player. No, I don't. I'm still not a huge Grayson Allen
fan.
He's kind of fun.
But
he's kind of
like,
fun on the Bucks. But
he played. But like, if you looked at the basketball sense of it, he played team professional basketball.
Mm-hmm. He did do a good job of playing a role on
yes.
those Bucks teams.
You understand? You understood what he had to do.
All right, moving on to the second Twitter portal. Mekhi Williams, the four-star safety, really the top player or top safety in the state of Florida, he went viral with his one-handed interception I don't know what camp this was, but it was at the University of Florida. You can see him right in the middle with the finger icon pointing. Yeah. An incredible play. As you can see, Tyrann Mathieu quote tweeted it and said, "That's an elite rep." Do you guys, is there any concern that there could be a poaching of Mekhi Williams from the Badgers?
Always. And that's not a Badgers thing, I mean, or even an NIL thing. Like, when you got the top players, they're always coming for you. And so I'm not saying it's not a knock on the Badgers. It's just life. This is, if you're going to get the best players, they're going to compete. I guarantee you Alabama worries about LSU and Georgia all the time and vice versa. And when you Ohio State worries about Michigan, if you're going to play in the big pool, you're going to have to worry about the big sharks coming for your guys.
Yeah, I think that's a credit to the Badgers and to Fickell for getting a guy like that that's worthy of being poached. I think that shows the trajectory of Wisconsin recruiting right now. Now you do have to hang on to him. I'm almost certain after that went viral, he got contacted by tons of big schools that are going to be in the mix for the college football playoff this year. Probably almost all of them, because that's just what happens, like Jim said. So I think it's a credit that you are able to secure commitments from guys like that. But as we know, until they're in your program, nothing's guaranteed. And then even then, year over year, you still got to win them back and continue to recruit. So I'm just happy he's a Badger right now.
And lastly, taking a look at this one. Dear Badger football, I don't know whose job it is, but the next AD needs to get us out of that neutral site game versus Virginia Tech in Charlotte and move it back to Blacksburg. They're playing Virginia Tech in 2032, I believe. We Badgers faithful want this away environment. Sincerely, everyone. Do you guys want to see the Badgers relocate the neutral site from Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte to Blacksburg and enter Sandman?
Yes.
I don't have a strong care. But yeah, sure, why not? I mean, so this is, I guess Bank of America is, I mean, I'm saying this jokingly, but their version of Lambeau then? Like, we're going to go play in the professional stadium?
Yeah. Which is not Lambeau.
No. I'll just stick more to like, yeah, there's like only a handful of stadiums that, and obviously we're biased up here, but like Lambeau, Soldier Field, I did the game, there was a game at Wrigley. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, as you work
the
way south.
Yankee Stadium.
If Fenway had one, I don't know if they can, but like if you could, like that's one. And other historic stadiums when you're up and down the coast. Bank of America Stadium is not one of them. So yeah, play it at the actual venue for Virginia Tech.
But
yeah.
What's interesting is that the Badgers are hosting them in 2032. I had this written down. 2032, Virginia Tech plays at Camp Randall.
In
2031, they're playing at Bank of America. So it's not like a home and home.
Sounds like a Virginia Tech problem then. Like, that doesn't sound like the Badgers' issue if we're hosting them. Yep. Yeah, I think I'm a firm believer in the home and homes. I like the Aer Lingus Bowl next year. I think it'll be cool to go to Ireland. But I'd still prefer home and homes, because you had back in 2015, 2016, et cetera, you had Wisconsin going down to Texas to play LSU. Then they played Alabama, I think also in Texas. Then you had LSU come up here at Lambeau, which Lambeau's a little different because it's such a cool environment. There's so much history there. But you know what was way cooler than playing Bama in Texas? Playing Bama in Tuscaloosa and hosting Bama at Camp Randall. I talked to so many Alabama fans who made that trip to Camp Randall and were talking about how much they had heard about Camp Randall. They wanted to see if all the rumors were true about how great of a college town Madison was, and they were really impressed. And they got to see our culture up here. I got to go down there last year and see the culture in Tuscaloosa, which is awesome. I love getting to go make those trips and seeing other campuses, other cultures. It was awesome being in Bama. It seemed like Bama fans love being up here. Give me home and home. I'd love to see Enter Sandman live and experience that. I want their fans to experience Jump Around. That's what makes college football so awesome. Get rid of neutral site games. Should always be home and home.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put an asterisk of, again, there's a few places where I think the neutral site
Lambeau
would be pretty badass. Yeah, but other than that, and I honestly, I can't think of them all, but yeah, there's definitely a handful of stadiums in the NFL, and maybe some baseball stadiums that could be converted. That would be pretty great for
the neutral site. But in general, I'm with you. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. We're going to be joined by Matt LePay. He's coming up in a minute here. Steinhoffel's Furniture and Mattress is celebrating America 250 with huge savings for your room. Right now, save up to 30% store-wide, plus get a $250 MasterCard when you spend $2,999 or more. Whether you're shopping for a new sofa, bedroom set, dining room, or mattress, now is the perfect time to save big and bring home the styles you love. Celebrate the Steinhoffel's America 250 sale. Shop in store or anytime at steinhoffels.com.
Ow, that's hot! Not as hot as the deals during the Steinhoffel's America 250 sale.
Right now, save up to 30% store-wide. Plus, get a $250 MasterCard rewards card with a purchase of $29.99. And 60-month financing makes it easy to bring it all home.
A nation united by comfort
and well-done deals.
So get into Steinhoffel's today, because a sale this big won't last forever.
And we are thrilled to, on the Jump Around, welcome in Matt LePay. And Matt, thanks for taking the time to join us. And it's that busy time of year, you know, mid-June, and so much is going on in sports. So, I mean, how do you spend this time of year? That's my main question for you.
Well, when Riley reached out, I thought, sure, I got an opening in my schedule here. I don't have a game for another 2.5 months. You know, it's a lot of charity events, which I know you guys do as well. Some other like administrative broadcast stuff with our Learfield folks, and not gonna lie, a little time at the cabin up north. Yeah. Be heading up there in a few days, but it seems like there's enough to stay fairly busy. You're just not preparing for a game quite yet.
Okay, what is Matt LePay's favorite summer activity? You're up at the cabin. Are you a big fisherman? Do you golf a lot? What's your go-to?
I've gotten to the point where golf brings anxiety. Okay. Because I'm so bad. I don't know. Are you guys golfers?
I mean, in name only.
Okay,
yeah.
So when you're...
I'll get out a few times.
Like when you're in these charity events, you're with people you may or may not know, and especially if you don't know them, like, you try to tell them, like, no, I'm not good. And right. Usually that's a sandbag type of approach.
Yeah.
With me, it's not. It's honest. So it's like, just let me hit the ball in the air fairly straight now and then, and I'm good with that. Favorite activity, though, in our little cottage we have up north, I'll eat the fish. I'm not very good at catching them.
Okay.
So you don't want to spill your drink on the pontoon. Like if it gets a little wavy out there. So just kind of be in that lazy floating living room type of thing. That's part of a perfect day for me when you're out on the boat.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's a good way to nice kind of reset and get away. But so this time of year, though, obviously in our line of work, we're talking heads. We got to talk all the time. But for you, how much do you kind of just consume sports, even if it's on the background, whether it's the Brewers or the Bucks news, but even just things about the Badgers being written, just to kind of stay in the loop so you kind of have that info, even if you never use it?
Yeah, with me this time of year, a lot of it is more big picture. We got the craziness of the college landscape these days, and now the 5 and 5, 5 years to play 5 seasons of college football, basketball, college athletics. You try to keep up to date with that as much as you can. Starting to collect some of the publications, you know, not so much on the Badgers, but on Notre Dame and all the Big Ten teams that these guys are going to face. You start to get that going a little bit. It's you want to escape to a certain extent, but now with rosters that change so much, including this one, like I'll start prepping Wisconsin stuff, you know, these days earlier than I would have back when Barry was coaching, or Brett, or even, you know, most of Paul's years, because you have a pretty good idea who's back. You know, Riley, you know, we were at spring practices, but I'm still trying to, who's this guy? Who's this guy? Because the roster has changed over so much. I'll put together probably a mock spotting board, which normally I don't do that in the middle of summer, but I'm getting to that point, like, I probably better. Let me just make sure I've got everybody's background squared away. And it's kind of nerdy in the weeds stuff I'm giving you here. But you want to stay up with it. You want to escape, but you also want to stay up with stuff reasonably well during the summer so you're not hit between the eyes come August 5th, August 6th when camp gets going.
Well, some of that has to be because, like, I mean, the fun part about this is that we're all lucky. And so it never really feels like work. It's kind of your passion for it. And you can hear that in the broadcast, but is that kind of like your marker for calling things and doing things is like, I'm always excited, so I want to keep on doing this because in the summer I do want to create a board and be ready to go.
Yeah, it is. I mean, as much as the college world has changed, you know, game day is still game day. You know, the band's going to play, the Bucky Wagon's going to come out, we're going to jump around, we're going to do all those cheers that Riley led, you know, back in the day. Basketball, the same thing. I know in basketball, a lot of people don't pay attention until March, but there's a lot of fun stuff that happens in December, November through February, and, you know, it's still Big Ten basketball. You get a big game, preferably on a Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock, but every night, every day is in play. But you get a Michigan State rolling in here, or in Illinois, there's still a big game atmosphere to it. When the Pac-10 schools, or Pac-12, Pac whatever, when they joined the league a couple of years ago, even like their broadcasters were saying, man, like every game in the Big Ten is kind of a big deal. Where, you know, maybe an Arizona State Stanford game didn't have a lot of juice on a December night in February, or a night game in February, a Wednesday night in February. In the Big Ten, in a lot of ways, it does. Not every arena, but a lot of them do. So that part is still fun for me. So as I tell fans, like with football, you don't have to worry too much about Sunday through Friday, but Saturday's fun. Let Saturday be Saturday, and that's still important.
Last broadcasting-related question from me, but you mentioned the changing landscape of college athletics. For you as a broadcaster, you've been at this for a little while now. How much has it changed for you, whether it be your weekly prep during the season, your daily prep, or the summer off-season? Like, how much has broadcasting changed
for you? In some ways, it's changed for the better for me. It's easier because you have better access to video preparation of an opponent. Now, first games are first games. The good news and the bad news is Notre Dame has a lot of guys back from last year. That's kind of the good news for prep. I don't know if it's good news otherwise, because they're probably going to be pretty good. Mm-hmm. But once you get into the season, you can easily access video of the opponents, whether it's through, you know, ESPN Plus, BTN Plus, whatever it is, or any other kind of maybe specific coaching video if you're that deep into it. I know Tausch likes to do that when he can. It's now, a lot of programs don't put out two deeps anymore, which they should be told to do that, but they don't. But there's still ways to access that. I've been really lucky here to have coaches, including Luke Fickell now, who will, like Tausch and I, will view practices. And not many people are allowed to do that. Now, we're not, obviously, something happens in a practice, we're not reporting that. It's just a way for us to get some background, get an idea of what they're doing. So in that regard, it's not that much different. Our booth locations in the Big Ten are still really good, but it's not always the case in the NFL. You talk to NFL radio guys, they'll tell you that. But it's not bad. I mean, we're able to talk to players during the course of the week, so that hasn't been a dramatic change in that regard. If anything, it's been a change for the better.
Okay, I lied. Quick follow-up on that.
Yeah, you broke the one rule. Don't say last broadcasting question.
I know.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
I know.
Might be the last question, but...
As you guys can tell, I'm still on the younger side. still figuring it out. So I lied. Follow-up on that. You mentioned you're able to watch practices, and I remember listening on the radio. I believe we were driving to our post-game location when Sean West pulled off the fake punt. I believe it was against Illinois, where he threw it to Jackson Aker, if I remember correct. I just remember you went nuts, and you said, we've seen them been working on that. How cool is it when you see them work on a trick play or something in practice, then you get to see it come to fruition in the game?
Yeah, a lot of times they work on stuff all year and never use it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was the one against Ohio State, which was probably a little crazy on his part, but it worked out. But, yeah, it is. Brett was really big into trick plays. So the same thing with him when they would run some stuff that, oh, look at this. You know, well, we've seen this a little bit in practice over the last few weeks. It is kind of fun, but you do have to, as a broadcaster, you have to hold it, obviously, until it happens. And then you say, okay, yeah, this is something that they've been eyeing up for the last X number of weeks, and to see it come to fruition, because it doesn't always work. That part, it's good. So it also takes a little bit of the element of surprise out of it. When they ran the Nolan Rucci pass play against Illinois, that was something that they had worked on some, and then they didn't. So when it actually happened, it was like, that is Nolan Rucci, right? Yeah. So because there was a number but no name, so there was a little bit of a hesitation there. But yeah, it's kind of fun when you see that happen. Brett was really big into it, and as we have seen with Fickell, they'll pull out a trick from time to time as well.
You can tell over time that the players obviously appreciate you on the broadcast and being a part of that, and players talk about that a lot. How much is it like enjoyment for you to be able to see some of these guys when they go? I mean, Nick Boyd might get drafted tonight. There's other guys that go in the NFL and different things. Like, how exciting for you is it to see them, and do you follow their careers after they leave Wisconsin?
It's one of the more fun parts of this, Jim. I remember Mike Chernilia, Jaden's father, when Mike was with the W Club, years ago we were at an event. I don't even remember specifically what the event was, some kind of a dinner. It might have been a basketball steak fry thing. He said, "What's the coolest part of your job?" And it's easy to say, well, when Sam Decker hit the step back three against Kentucky, or you mentioned moments, but it's seeing players who you got to know a little bit. Now, Nick Boyd was here 1 year, but seems like a great dude, always upbeat. But guys who have been here for 3, 4, 5 years, and then to watch them go on to the league, and then when they come back, you're able to have conversations, and that's the fun part of that. And now, kind of, you're asking Riley about the broadcast. You know, has there been changes with the landscape? Not so much there, or what has changed has been for the better. On the other side, you're probably going to get fewer of those kind of players who were here for, you know, wire to wire, and then watch them go into the league. But still, you know, to see a John Tanje get an opportunity, hopefully, you know, Nick Boyd will get a really good opportunity. Yep. That is, in, you know, Sam Decker and Devin Harris, saw him a couple days ago in an event. Guys like that, it's always fun to kind of track their career, and all those Badger football players through the course of time who have carved out, drafted or not, who have carved out very good NFL careers.
Luke Fickell talked a little about this, as far as like college football has changed a little bit, maybe how you're getting the players, but in that locker room it's the same. But he kind of made a joke at the end, made me think about basketball as well. But he's like, well, maybe the guys are a little bit older. And I do find that dynamic interesting of someone, I think, it may have been Tanjay himself talking about how he'd open up the, you know, not actually, but like open up the newspaper and have a cup of coffee when everyone else is, you know, having, yes, you know, an energy drink or whatever. But that dynamic has to be something new and probably fun to see when you have a player who's maybe 23, 24 on the basketball team, on the football team, interacting with the 18, 19-year-olds. Because it's more than just, oh, freshman and senior. It is someone who is established a little bit in life, and an 18-year-old. That's a big difference between 18 and 23.
It is, and you know, you really notice it in football, but the same can be said for basketball and probably any other sport. It's been interesting. The basketball guys are starting their summer program right now, a lot of lifting and then some time on the court, and being over there a couple of times in the last week, I'm still in my own mind getting adjusted to, okay, this team has 8 newcomers. But a lot of these they're men.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a bunch of skinny kids just getting out of high school. And what you're noticing is even those high school kids aren't necessarily – they're built a little differently than maybe what they used to be. But you're talking about guys who are 22, 23. I think is Owen Foxwell 23 or 24, I think. I mean, he's not 18 years old, just coming in wide-eyed. So there is – I mean, even in my own mind, with that many newcomers, it doesn't mean they're new to this level of play. So that part has been – That's been a real eye-opener for me here the past couple of years especially.
How have you seen that specifically impact, whether it be on the field, football, on the court, basketball? It feels to me it'd probably have a bigger impact on the court in basketball because there's just such a smaller roster, more opportunities to make an impact or sort of showcase that leadership being older. But how have you seen that increased age sort of impact the games themselves?
Well, you would hope in most cases, and I think we've seen that here at Wisconsin, these are guys who really know how to play. And like with Nick Boyd, for instance, I mean, Dusty May coached him at FAU, and you know, he's had very good coaching prior to his time at Wisconsin. John Tanje is a very similar story. So they come in here with a general knowledge of what works at this level of basketball. But still, you know, they're newcomers here. So this is a really important time of year, not just for the obvious, the X's and O's on the court, but just all the other things that you're expected to do as a Wisconsin basketball player. So that's where you rely heavily on a Nolan Winter, who's a wire-to-wire guy, and then, you know, Jack Janicki, and even, you know, the sophomores, like Will Garlock, guys like that, Hayden Jones, they've been through it, and they can help guide these, you know, if it's a Trey Autry, a Victory Onetu, got that name down yet? when he's blocking shots coming up this winter. You know, I'm sure they come in here and their head's spinning at first, but these other guys help bring them in and okay, this is what things are done. This is what the expectations are here, and they're pretty good at following that.
Yeah, and you know, with that, as far as setting expectations and having that around, I think one of the things I heard, it was actually earlier today, was Antonio Freeman was telling his son, Alex Freeman, on the USA soccer team to ask questions of the veterans and ask, you know, ask the older guy, be the one that annoys them. And mm-hmm. I was, you know, whether it's someone you remember or any, like, do you remember some of these young guys? I mean, Borland kind of came out of nowhere, Taylor, but were there traits that you saw in them, forget even physically, but just the way they were curious about the game, that you kind of in your head, maybe it was in pre, you know, whether it's spring practice or in June now for basketball, being like, I might just remember that name right now because they might matter a little bit later.
You're talking about transfers or anybody in particular?
Just anyone just popped into your head.
Cooper Catalano.
Okay.
I mean, just watching him even last fall camp in Platteville, like, ooh. And, you know, people in this state, we know that he had a zillion tackles, the all-time tackles leader in Wisconsin high school football. But, like, and even in August, I wasn't smart enough to think, ooh, this guy's going to be, like, one of the really big guys in this program, he and Mason Posa, but he always seemed to be around the ball. Like, okay. I mean, that is a for instance. And a couple of years ago, Greg Gards talked about this a lot as a transfer. John Tanjay had played a lot of basketball. But, you know, Gard has mentioned this multiple times. Like, a lot of times you can think you know everything about everything. You know, you scored 13, 14 points a game at Colorado State. You're at Missouri. You got hurt. It was a tough year there. But you're not new to college basketball. But he said a guy like him came in with questions. He didn't come in with all the answers or claiming to have all the answers. So that, I think that's an important component to this, and not just the two sports I'm around, football and men's basketball. But I think, you know, Kelly Sheffield would tell you this with volleyball and you know, Mark Johnson, Mike Hastings with hockey. Like, you have to get the skill set, but you have to have all the other components too. You have to be willing to listen, willing to learn, willing to be coached, not be a disruptor in the locker room. And I think, you know, you've really, like, basketball, everything seems more noticeable, right? But they seem like they've hit home runs in that regard. They've had pretty good dudes. I'm not saying everybody's perfect, but the chemistry is, by and large, been good. I know this past year with the Boyd Blackwell thing, it was a little tough for John, or maybe more than a little. But he had a lot of really big games, and Nick Boyd had a lot of really big games, and they won a ton of games. So whatever differences there might have been, they worked through that and put together a really good season.
So you mentioned Cooper Catalano. This is probably an unfair question to ask in June, but from watching spring ball and being around the team, is there anyone that you have seen that has given you that same emotion reaction that you saw from Cooper Catalano last year? I understand that was fall camp, so a little different. But is there anyone on football roster? I know you just talked about the basketball team. Basketball roster, too, that you've noticed.
This current team right now? I know Colton Joseph, I think, it can be really, really impressive. But you talk about unfair. Here we are in June. And a true freshman, this Ryan Hopkins kid out of Newport Beach, California. You're like, okay, all right. You know, he can spin it, he can run. Seems like he has a presence about him. But all three of them, you know, Deuce Adams too. You know, those top three quarterbacks, and Carter Smith is a tough dude. You know, now is the skill set, you know, with all the others, you could debate that. But the Hopkins kid was really, really impressive. I think Abu Sama, running back transfer out of Iowa State, he's someone you're like, okay, all right. They may have something there. So those are a couple, maybe two or three right there. I'm still, like, in the spring, you're trying to process it. As you know, the offensive line, they had a couple guys who missed some time. And that's going to really have to get – if they can get that solidified, that could solve a lot of other things here. But the quarterbacks, the three newer faces, you're like, okay. I think there's a pretty good skill set, and they have similar skill sets. If one has to come in for the other, I don't think they have to totally revamp the offense, which you hope is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, like, as a broadcaster, obviously quarterback's the most important position, and you get a chance, you get access to these quarterbacks. And I remember down in Florida, down in Miami, I'd be around, I was standing on the sideline, and Kyle Wright, who was the number one recruit in the country at, and he was playing at Miami, and you could see him, like, fantastic in practice, just never in the game. And when you interviewed him from afar, you'd be like, I don't see, like, how is he, like, getting the guys to rally behind him? Michael Irvin standing next to me yelling and screaming. He's like, how is this guy our quarterback? And, like, mm-hmm. was very upset on the sidelines there. So it just always reminded me that there is a it factor. So I can never necessarily nail it down, but there are certain players you talk to. You know, we can use quarterback as an example, but, like, when you're talking to someone, what is that factor? There's something there that you can kind of just pick up on where you're like, okay, we'll have to see what the talent is, but they seem to have whatever it is to be successful.
Yeah, I've been fooled by that at times, because when Jack Cohn was here, you talk to him and you're thinking, okay, you know, nice kid, you know, like, all right, nothing special. And but then you get him out there and the respect that he earned in that locker room, the command that he must have had in the huddle, dude was good.
Yeah.
You know, and just, was he flashy? No. Was he really good and tough? Yeah. And I would go back even, you may not have been born yet, Riley, Mike Samuel back in the 98 season especially. I mean, the old joke, he couldn't, you know, we're separated by like 6 feet, six, yeah. 7 feet. I couldn't, you know, we wouldn't complete it from me to you until the game was on the line.
Right.
And then he was like one of the more clutch quarterbacks that I've seen here in the 38 years, I guess, I've been around. And tough as nails, strong. He was one of those guys, if you sat him down as a college player here, you'd be lucky to get more than 10, 12 words in any answer. But there was a toughness about him that you had to forget about, you know, how much of a conversation you would have with him. He would go out and play. So in the past, I try to be, like, it's important. We're spoiled. We like guys who can really talk. Like, I love Graham Mertz, because he was just a great guy to be around, and his first start here was magical. And then there were a lot of circumstances that maybe had things go sideways. And then he, you know, as you see, he went to Florida and put up some good numbers and got himself drafted, and, you know, things worked out well for him. But, like, Kona, in the last, like, 7-8 years or so, he was one of those guys that he wouldn't overwhelm you in a casual conversation, but, man, you if he was your quarterback, say, okay, I'm good, let's go.
Okay, you mentioned the it factor for players. Were there any – I'm sure you get asked this question a lot as a broadcaster. You mentioned you've been doing it for 38 years. But what are some of the – I don't know. Maybe if they
didn't
even...
You're not supposed to mention that again.
Sorry. This whole interview is a learning experience for me, and I appreciate it. But were there maybe some individual moments where maybe if the player didn't showcase the it factor all the time, but you mentioned Mike Samuel in the clutch, where are there some moments that stick out to you where someone had a Herculean effort and maybe you didn't expect it, or... Just a big moment that sticks out to you.
That's a good question. I'll probably think of that in like 5 hours and text you.
Okay, thank you. Know, that'll work.
As a basketball player, a guy named Rob Wilson. He was a nice player, had pretty modest statistics, and then in a Big Ten tournament game against Tom Crean's Indiana Hoosiers, he drops 30 points.
I remember that game. Yeah,
it's like. Hey, Tom, you just can't catch a break against these guys. You know, you've got them on the ropes. And then Rob Wilson, who averages single digits, just goes off on you. And, you know, the one that goes back to that, I guess we're 26 years removed, and it wasn't just one moment. It was a series of games that led to the Final Four, John Bryant. He averaged 8 points a game, I think, during the regular season. He doubled that in the four games in the West Regional. So that's part of the beauty of sports, is that that Herculean performance can come from sources you just don't know. But Jim, go back to your I can't we talk about quarterbacks. I cannot talk Wisconsin quarterbacks without mentioning Brooks Bollinger.
Yeah, well,
because there was that's kind of the obvious, like, do you really even need to say that?
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, Russell was tremendous. I love Scotty Tolzien, But I think Tauscher, in fact, I know Tauscher would say this, like, if I needed a quarterback, I wanted wire to wire for 2-3 years, Brooks is my guy. I mean, he just, to this day, there is a presence about him that you cannot help but be impressed with. I mean, and he could go make the plays, not flashy, but he could beat you with his feet, and he could throw it better at the college level than people gave him credit for.
And again, not to like joke, but he didn't. It's not the physical stature; it was just his overall presence that you just—he literally felt bigger than he actually was. So I think that's a great answer on that. This is the last one I have for you, and you mentioned the quarterback here, and I've always kind of heard this, and maybe this is right or wrong, but like broadcasters for like national or even for the Badgers here yourself, it's. When you're calling a game, you're assuming the fans know maybe the quarterback, and the rest you kind of got to make sure you're filling in all the color in the lines for them. How much has that even changed more with the transfer portal era? I mean, it's impossible for me to keep up. Obviously, it's your job to keep up, but even someone for me where I'm always trying to keep up, half the time I'm like, who is this guy? And I'm the one listening to the broadcast, and I'm like, I have to go like look up online who this player is. So has that kind of, I want to say changed, but are you even more aware as far as having to really fill in the details on some of these players?
That's one of the challenges, and that's where it's gotten more difficult with the changing landscape, because you want to try to introduce these newer faces as best you can, but the game moves quickly. We have a fair amount of traffic that we get in during the course of a game broadcast, and that's vital to what we do. But as we get going into the first game and during the first game against Notre Dame and game two, game three, we need to tell them who is this Abu Sama? Mm-hmm. You know, tell me about Malachi Coleman. He's been a few different places. Maybe this is the breakout opportunity for him at receiver after being at Minnesota the year before and at Nebraska before that. That's the challenge for us. We know Tausch will take care of the offensive line. You know, they never hold any holding calls a bad call. We all know that. But Tausch, I mean, he's great with a lot of things, but including that. But yeah, I'm going to need to. Who is this Colton Joseph? Who is Deuce Adams? Who is Ryan Hopkins? And even like Carter Smith, we know a little bit.
Yep.
But it was later in the year before he had his opportunity. So that's. I think that's important for us to do that as best as we can, because the roster has turned over as much as it has.
Last one from me. You mentioned the players earlier that you've seen in practice and are excited to watch. Just in general with Wisconsin football, obviously, last season, not what we all hoped for. But why should Badgers fans still be excited heading into the fall of 2026?
Well, I think just based on what I've seen, They seem to me to have a better collection of talent. Now, I guard that by I don't know how much better their opponents are going to be. I know Notre Dame is going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
The first three Big Ten opponents are with new coaching staffs. USC is thought to be really, really good this season. They'll play those guys, I think, toward the end of October. I do think, and I don't know where it ranks, but I feel like that they have had more resources with which to acquire these players. We could call it recruiting. Maybe acquire is an equally important word in college athletics these days. I think their commitment with Jeff Grimes to running the ball, they've got some, they went pretty aggressively into the portal for offensive linemen, which I think that's important to do. What got lost last year, I think the defense was pretty good. We all know the offensive struggles, but the defense, now they need to create more turnovers. We all know that. But I think they're better in the secondary potentially this season, a little more speed there. So, yeah, I think the schedule is the schedule, and that's an easy trap to fall into. They're not playing Oregon, Ohio State, Indiana, or Michigan. Okay, I get that. But USC's probably going to be pretty good. Penn State, have they ever not been talented? And Matt Campbell is bringing over a lot of the good guys that he had from Iowa State. Hopefully he missed on the one who's up here, specifically with Abu. I think he's pretty good. But I get it, because for the longest time, Wisconsin football, you would give them the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. And I know now it's a little bit of a different mentality, but I do think they have more tools to work with. I think they recognized some of their own mistakes in the program. And I will forever believe that Luke Fickell's a really good football coach. It has not worked the way anybody would want it to this point. But the record shows that he's really good at what he does. And I think he and everybody over there can look in the mirror, saying, okay, I like this. We need to change this, this, and this. And I think they've taken steps to do that.
Matt, we appreciate the generosity with your time. Mm-hmm. This has been the Jump Around on ESPN Madison and ESPN Milwaukee's YouTube streams.